No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's BBS RadioOne. No guests tonight, so please call in and join the conversation, because you know Kathleen can be kind of a bully and she may not let me talk if we don't get some feedback from our audience. And again, that number is 888-627-6008. And please make plans to tune in next week when our guest will be Ayelet Hines, who is a faculty member at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We will be discussing advocacy, politics, public health, and more. So plan to join us for what I'm sure will be an interesting and informative discussion. Before I go any further, let me introduce my lovely co-host, Kathleen, who is just back from a visit to Columbia, Missouri, which this week was ranked as one of the top five stress-free cities in America. Did you know that, Kathleen?
I didn't know that.
Is that why you left? That's why you left, because you need the stress.
Right. I needed to be all the drama in my life. Exactly. I just couldn't go stress-free. It was very, you know, very neat place, actually. Excuse me. It's grown a lot, of course. Everything does after 40 years, but I was really impressed. I mean, I was on this campus too, you know, Stevens, which is an all-female college. They do allow boys into the theater department, or young men, I guess. But I told you, I think on the last show, that I stopped a woman, and fortunately she was the president, the student president of Stevens College, and so talked to her for a long time, and it was really interesting, you know. She said it's full to capacity. They have about 700 living on campus, 1,000 off, which is their capacity. And Columbia is a pretty neat place. It's pretty progressive.
Is it still an all girls college?
Still an all girls college, yeah.
Wow.
Still,
because there aren't many of them left, are there?
No, there's not. And it's at capacity. Because I asked her, I said, well, you know, I was thinking, really, how many women want to go to a small all-women college? And, you know, actually, to tell you the truth, it was the best time I ever had. I actually learned how to get along with women. I actually, without the male thing, I didn't have to worry about how I looked. I worried about whether or not I had studied hard enough. It was really a really empowering situation for someone growing up in a very male, chauvinistic, Mexican Catholic society. Yeah, it was real empowering. So anyway, point is, pretty cool. So stress-free, huh? That's good.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Some study showed it was one of the top stress-free places. And I'd like to point out, now, please don't take this personally, but one of the other stress-free, I know you will, that one of the other stress-free places was in North Dakota. So it's
don't
like you're
me.
Always leaving. Yeah, you're always leaving the stress. You do need drama in your life. But I've heard many women who have gone to all women colleges say the same thing that you're saying, that mm-hmm. that they find it you know, less, there's less stress and there's more emphasis on on you know, academics and being who you are and finding yourself. And we had one in my neighborhood, actually in Virginia, called Sweetbriar, that almost went under this year, and they saved it at the last minute. But there are not a lot of all-women colleges left.
Marymount College was right, an all-girls school right off Foxhall. That's
right.
That's gone. I was shocked.
And that's been absorbed. I don't know who absorbed. I can't remember if it was Georgetown or American University, but some college, I think it's Georgetown in Washington, has absorbed Marymount. But, yeah. I dated a girl that went to Marymount. She dumped me.
You didn't put the chokehold on her.
I didn't put the chokehold on her. No,
right.
She dumped me. I couldn't believe it.
When we were young and we would go out, Michael would always, like, you know, well, Senator Brown would always, back then, Michael Brown would always have a chokehold over some girl.
Oh, now you're making things up. That's not true. And
I think this girl
only dated me because I drove a Harley at the time, and her father owned a candy store in Washington. And they lived in Chevy Chase. And I drove this greasy old Harley, and I think she did it just because the sight of me just annoyed her father no end.
So
I had long hair.
Not to digress, but did you say that the other one, stress-free, was in North Dakota?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was Fargo, but it was in North Dakota. Yeah,
do you know how freaking cold it is in North Dakota? There's no way you can be stress-free. There's no way. And then when it snowed a lot and it rains a lot, then it always floods. So I don't know what they consider stress-free. Because being up there...
It's funny because in the movie, right? In the movie Fargo, this guy's like, kill everybody. They're definitely...
Exactly, and they are all... I'm sorry, North Dakotans, but they tend to be very much similar. They're all like, I mean, because, you know, I mean, until the oil rush or whatever, you know, I think all of North Dakota had 500,000 people. That was it. So I don't know how these, you know, and then I think it was a month ago, they said Bisbee, Arizona was one of the best places to be. You know, I mean, you know, but it changes all the time. So I have no clue. All I know is that I usually enter a place, like the market now here in Kansas City is skyrocketing. The minute I get here, everyone says, oh, rents are real affordable. Now, all of a sudden, everything is skyrocketing. It's been up 10% from last year, and rents are, I mean, it's amazing. I don't know.
Well, you know, I found you a nice condo in Abbess Morgan, where you like to live in Washington.
Right.
And it's only $279,000, brand new,
right?
But it's 370 square feet.
Do you remember the
walk-in closet with a bathroom?
Do you remember the apartment I had up there on Adams Morgan? It overlooked the cathedral. I had a walk-in closet. I mean, it was a great old, you know, beautiful pre-war building. And one bedroom, and had wind. Oh my gosh, it was just great. It was just great. But so, you know, it's funny because Kansas City is becoming an up and coming city. You know, it's been, you know, actually, it's got great food, got a great Mexican community. You can get as good food here as I could get on the Mexican border. It's got it's very progressive, a lot of little neighborhoods. But it's amazing. It's like it's becoming now, I can see where it's getting houses were maybe 140,000. Now all of a sudden they're 250. So it's strange how this phenomena happens where you hear all this bad news, but things, you know, nothing seems to match what you hear or what is happening. I don't know, you know. I mean, St. Louis probably is another city that's a little bit more blue collar. Maybe it's a little bit cheaper. It's a lot different than Kansas City. But, you know, it's strange. I guess housing, buying homes is on the up now that the market went down. That was a crazy thing. You know, somebody made a lot of money on Monday. That's all I can say. And it wasn't you and me, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, not you and me, but I'll tell you, maybe you should stop talking up Kansas City, because maybe that's the problem. People are hearing you tell what a wonderful place it is, and then they want to move there. And, you know, yeah. I don't know. You're talking about the place you had in Adams Morgan. Right. I don't know how people can afford it anymore. I'd like to give a shout out to my daughter, who graduated with honors from DePaul University and just secured her first post-college job as a waitress.
No.
She's a server in a sports bar. Now,
oh, no.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
And you know, we all our first jobs, you know, yes. Right, were tough. But how do you afford, you know, how's she going to afford a place to live? I just don't know.
The only thing is, you know, it's weird. We know people that work in restaurants that make really good money, and they make a lot of money, and it becomes hard for them to give it up. And this is the hardest job I've ever done in my life. Because, you know, I was supported to pay bills and stuff by a job and waitressing. And my gosh, I mean, the public is not fun to be around. But I mean, what exactly? I think I paid maybe $400 for that apartment that was in the late 80s, I guess mid 80s. And now I'm sure that apartment is about $3,000 or $4,000. So you're right.
Yeah, I bet it is. I mean, it's just amazing to me. Well, so let's move on a little bit.
I was going to make is, where can kids like your daughter go now? Because if places like Kansas City, which was kind of considered, you know, cost of living low, and like Columbus, Ohio, and all these places, but now it seems like they're getting built up. And now it's just becoming very difficult for young kids to even be able to get their own apartment. I don't know what's happening, but I wish somebody would call in and let us know what they think.
Missouri, stress-free.
That's where we got to go, Columbia, Missouri.
North Dakota, somewhere, where they're more worried about the cold than they are about the stress.
There you go.
Well, let me just run down quickly what's going on with statehood in the District of Columbia. We have no new sponsors, of course, in the new Columbia Emissions Act, because Congress is still on vacation. You know, for people that want the rest of us to work really hard, it seems like they spend a lot of time vacationing themselves, and they won't be back till after Labor Day. But we do want to acknowledge that the communications director in our office, Haley Jardis, left today to compete in the Miss America pageant in Atlantic City, and we wish her a lot of luck. Kelly's a great person, and she's the current Miss D.C., and she's taking the message of D.C. statehood with her to the national stage, so we wish her a lot of luck. But that's all that's going on with statehood this week. We had a reception for it. It was a lot of fun. But, you know...
What are the organizations over there doing? Is anybody gearing up for anything in D.C.? What's the next big event?
It's funny you should say that. The head of our Democratic Party and council member, Anita Bonds, went to the National Conference of Legislators last week and put forth a resolution in support of D.C. statehood. And it failed.
And who was this? Bonds and who? Orange?
No, Bonds. Just Bonds.
Bonds.
I mean, she's the one that put it forth as the... There might have been other people that were involved, but she was the primary. She was the primary person, and it failed. West Virginia came in at the last minute and voted against it. And we have a resolution, as you probably know, because you were part of drawing the resolution. The Democratic National Committee had their summer meeting, summer meeting this week and in Minnesota. And at their winter meeting, you helped draft a resolution which they passed, which recognized our office and also recognized statehood. So we've gotten the Democratic Party to pass it, but we couldn't get the National Conference of State Legislators to pass
those,
it.
Those are like your local state congressmen and
local
House
state
delegates or whatever they're called.
Mayors, so probably.
Mayors and city council.
Mostly state, you know, like state senators and state representatives. We used to go to that. In fact, Paul and I went to the Philadelphia meeting and the one in New Orleans, but we didn't go this year to San Francisco. We were both tied up. We should have been out there pushing for it.
You guys should have some money to be able to do that. I don't know how anybody thinks they can get statehood without putting any money into it. What in this world gets done without money, unfortunately? Maybe loving one another and saying, I don't know anything. Everything needs money of some form. I don't know why they won't do it.
I want to tell you, Washington, D.C. did not make it into the top stress-free cities.
We made it
the most congested city in America. Can you believe that?
I saw that.
More than L.A.
New York.
More than Chicago.
You sit in traffic the most.
Right.
And it was amazing.
Hours, 82 hours. As opposed to 40 or 84 hours, as opposed to 42 hours as a national average per year. So double what most people are sitting in, and probably quadruple what the people in Columbia, Missouri are sitting in.
I can't even imagine.
We unfortunately, among other tragedies in Washington this week, had a former Navy SEAL run over on his bicycle and killed right in our neighborhood. Traffic is just getting terrible.
And the bicycles, there's so many people who bike ride. I mean, it's just impossible with all that traffic to even see him. So he was killed? That's terrible.
Yeah, he was killed. And I don't know. We've been looking in the newspaper, but there haven't been a lot of details about it. Other than, I don't know. I don't think anybody was charged in the accident as of this point. But, yeah, it's terrible. I think he was 52, and he was a former Navy SEAL, and he was out, doing his morning exercise, and which we all should be doing. Let's talk a little politics, you and me, huh? Again, after you've gone out there and talked about Kansas City and made everybody start to move to Kansas City. Yeah. Also last week, you had some unkind things to say about Hillary Clinton. And in Iowa, she's fallen in the polls from 50% in May to 37%.
I'm telling you, I told you this a long time ago. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know what they're saying? That I guess the guy who did the pollster, I forget who it was. It was somebody who did something about her stance and where her popularity was in Iowa in 2008. And that's when, it started to go bad for her. And he was saying it's the same thing. It's the same thing like 2008. I just think they come off her campaign. Comes off very, snobby, but very arrogant, know-it-all, kind of like entitled, somehow. And I think what's happening right now with Donald Trump, I think, and I'm going to say this today, I haven't told you what I think, but I think this is going to be something that changes the tides forever. I just think people are so tired of political correctness, so tired of having to always say the right thing, and everyone has to be equal, everyone has to be okay, everyone's going to be, everyone's the same. It's almost like a socialist thing. I mean, where you can't, for instance, I was looking at President Obama's going to, actually strange, the first sitting president to ever visit Alaska. He's going to change the name of Mount McKinley to what the native Alaskans call it, which is Del Rainey or something like that. Now, you know what I mean? I mean, okay, it probably should never have been maybe named McKinley because the natives were the ones that lived there, but for 80 years it's been called that. And what now? Does everything change? Does everything have to be so politically correct that now we have to change names of everything because it might reflect, a world in where the white people, I guess, had superiority. I don't know. I think people are just tired of it. And they want someone to say stuff that people just go, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. That's what we all think. But, my God, he said it. And it's this common sense thing. Well, when you have so many here illegally, it doesn't add up. You don't have enough services. This doesn't make sense. And that's what Donald Trump is, you know, coming in on. This just doesn't make sense anymore. So anything is better than this.
Well, isn't that sad, though? Because if you remember, the last time you came to Washington, D.C., I went to pick you up at National Airport, but, oh, it's not National Airport anymore.
It's Reagan.
Ronald Reagan Airport. And it's the Ronald Reagan building. And
yeah.
They named every damn thing in the town after him. You know, I'm sure if we'd given them half a chance, they would have renamed Washington, D.C. Reaganville. And you know, and there were even, and as crazy as it sounds, I even remember a movement at one point, it didn't go anywhere, where people were talking about putting his head on Mount Rushmore.
It was, you know? True, I remember that.
So it's just crazy, and I don't think, you know, and that's the sad thing, is that I agree that people do get tired of political correctness, but, oh my God, let's not have our spokesman be this guy who this week was endorsed by renowned racist David Duke of Louisiana and praised by white supremacist groups. Now, in his defense, I will say that he did not seek their endorsement and he has denounced their endorsement. But it also, I think, speaks volumes about his rhetoric that these people are attracted to him.
But let's be fair. When Obama started to run, you know, the first black African American to run for presidency, you know, there was also the groups that were very radical that endorsed Obama too. I mean, I Duke always goes on and endorses people and stuff like that. And I mean, he does what he stands for is terrible, but there always is the opposite, too. I mean, I'm not saying that this guy is the kind of guy that I want representing, or whether, you know, the Nazi or the white supremacy group, it is scary, but at least you know they're there. I mean, at least you realize they're there. I mean, everything's gotten so politically correct, and, you know, nobody even talks about those groups, and sometimes it's better to face it than to assume that it's just somewhere else, you know? And I think that maybe political correctness has brought us to a time where, you know, it's kind of subdued a lot of the things maybe we should be looking at because we're too afraid not to speak it about it. We don't deal with it.
Wait a second, Miss Stevens College, I'm a feminist. You want to go back to the old days?
I just think I would rather know my enemy. I would rather know where he is and what he's doing and that he's involved in this than to not know where he is and it be silent and nobody wants to talk about it because it's politically incorrect to even, you know, give them a voice. I mean, the part of being an American and being free and free speech is being everyone being able to speak their mind. And I think it's better to know what people are thinking than everyone talking this stuff that nobody really means. I mean, but they're just politically correct. I don't think it's really gotten us where we wanted to go. I mean, I think, like everything in the United States, there's no middle ground. You know, it swings to the right or it swings all the way to the left. You need it to come to the middle. That's really where common sense is. And I think now we're seeing people are just so fed up. It might go too far wherever it's going to go, but they're shouting out, we need more common sense. And anybody that can just have the guts to stand up and say what people have been thinking but afraid to it, I mean, I think people are identifying him. And they don't identify with anybody else. So nobody identifies with Bush. I kind of like Bush. You know, Rubio, definitely Walker, which is kind of good. He's kind of really pummeled it down. You know, so I don't, you know, I'm just saying.
Are you
that
turning into a Republican?
No,
I need to wait a second. We need to come out there and do an intervention.
You might have to because I don't like Hillary and I haven't liked her for a long time and I don't like the people that work with her. Okay, there I said it and I'll always be blackballed, but so freaking what? I've been blackballed in Cochise County and blackballed maybe in D.C. soon to come and what the hell? It's good.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, I do agree that politicians need to be braver. They need to stand up and not succumb so much. We all want to, and it's not easy. As an elected official, I can say it's not easy to stand up there when you know that you're in a crowd of people that, you know, maybe they're gun advocates, and you need to stand up against, you know, your opinion is there should be, or my opinion anyway, is there should be tighter gun control. So, you know, it's hard to stand up in front of an audience of people you know are going to dislike you and say what you really believe, that we need tougher gun laws. It's not an easy thing to do, but we need to do that. And you know, if that's what you believe. And you know, we see a lot of politicians who want to stand up there and make everybody happy. They want to say, yeah, I'm for tougher gun laws, but I'm also for your Second Amendment right to bear arms, and, you know, and this and that and this and that. And they want to try to pander to both sides. And I think you're right. I think that people get tired of that. And we need to stop jumping on those things and give people a little breathing room to say how they really feel. But we also need to have the politicians be brave enough to stand up and say what they feel. And if this guy, Donald Trump, continues to do well, I think it's a sad commentary on where we are in America.
Oh, yeah.
Because the guy's a racist. And he doesn't understand. Look, the guy started out his life as a multimillionaire. I don't understand why people don't see beyond the charade of people like this who are just trying to tell them what they want to hear. You know, he wants to blame the job situation on immigration. Meanwhile, we're giving tax breaks to corporations that are sending all your jobs to China and India so they can make more money. It's not immigrants sneaking over the border working at McDonald's. It's companies that outsource all their jobs to India because they understand that they can pay 10 cents on the dollar to people who speak English. And can you know, when was the last time you had a computer problem where you dialed the 800 number and you got somebody in the United States?
Yeah, well, that's for true. That's for sure. And, you know, the one thing I'd like to add, though, is like if everybody wants this change, then it still becomes – the bottom line is with the citizen because they have to go vote,
right.
And we don't vote. So,
right.
You know, it'll be interesting to see if people will turn out to vote for this guy. And what are they going to get? I mean, that's going to be real interesting. And I think, unfortunately, people are so disconnected with Washington and so disenchanted and so frustrated and so feel out here. You know, I run into a lot. It just doesn't matter if I vote. It just doesn't matter. It's too corrupt. It's too whatever. And if you look at what happened in Kansas, they voted that guy, Pat Roberts, back in, who doesn't even live in Kansas. He lives in like 30, 40 years in D.C., doesn't even own any property, but they still voted. I guess it was a low turner vote out because they still went and voted this guy in, other than having an independent who, you know, I think would have represented Kansas better. But, you know, I think that, you know, you could see it go all the way.
Well, I've got to agree again with one thing you're saying. I think everybody in Washington, D.C., everybody that's involved in politics should get a government-paid vacation to somewhere in middle America so they really – because we do get isolated here, and we do get isolated on the East Coast. You know that my brother – is president of a college in Zanesville, Ohio, and I go to Zanesville, and it's a solidly Republican area, and I talk to people, and yeah, they think that Washington is corrupt. They think that Washington's out of touch. They think that we don't represent them anymore, and I understand that, and I think that many people in Washington don't understand that. I think they, you know, I've always said that the Achilles heel of liberal Democrats is that we talk down to people. You know, you really don't want a gun. You're just too dumb to realize it, and we're going to explain to you why you don't want it, you know? Right. And right. and I think that's our weakness, is that we don't take enough time. We talk more than we listen. So that I agree with. I think we should all spend more time listening to people who are not part of this kind of East Coast liberalism. And that's what democracy is supposed to be about, right? We're supposed to, you're right, we're all supposed to get out there and participate so that the extremes cancel each other out and we push things to the middle, right. To a middle ground. And so who are we going to get? Who are the Democrats? If Hillary's not our person, is it Joe?
Biden?
Is it Bernie?
Biden and Warren,
maybe. I mean, you and I both, I think, have a soft spot in our hearts for Elizabeth Warren. We like the way she thinks. We love her attitude as somebody that's both has kids in college. We love her attitude about student loans. Right. And we agree 100%. I think I can speak for you when I say that we both agree you shouldn't be lending money to Wall Street bankers at a lower rate than you're lending it to college students. But I don't know. What do you think about the people of Kansas? You think they'll vote for Biden? You think they'll vote for Warren?
No, I think even, you know, there are a lot of Republicans here. Of course, it's very conservative. And you have these little, I think, Overland Park and a couple other neighborhoods are kind of the ones that are progressive. But no, I think that they don't see any Democrat as someone they would like. And the Democrats that I do speak with, you know, they're not. They think they'd go with Hillary because they think that if any of them, that she could win, but they're not enthusiastic.
It's not like there's no fire burning
in anyone's stomach, you know, like Obama brought for people,
I think a lot of women want to see a woman president.
Yeah, but I told you before, they don't want to see necessarily that be the first, you know, that Hillary Clinton being the first president, woman president, you know, because I think that there's just too much issue. There's too many lies. There's too much history. You know, and even when Bill was doing all that stuff, you know, and they were on TV and she was standing by him, and nobody could ever warm up to her. She's like, I think she's like a Thatcher, but she doesn't come across as someone that you could trust. Like, you know, they all believed in Thatcher, and Thatcher was conservative, but did very well for England. So, you know, but she doesn't have that. She's not someone that you feel. You know what she reminds me of? The girl in high school who was always smart, kind of always involved, even though nobody really liked her because she was a know-it-all. And then that just carried on afterwards. Because I see, you know, I just don't see any warmth in the people around her. I don't see anything. They don't seem to be realistic about stuff. They don't listen. So.
Well, I feel some of that too. I feel that, you know, that it is that her campaign a little bit is just what I was talking about with liberals talking down to America. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this thing about emails is just unimportant, you know, is their attitude, I think.
Right.
And you know what? I'm not sure that I don't agree with them. But if it's important to the American people, then you should at least, you know, do more than just kind of blow it off and say, you know what? And so now she's standing up and saying that there's nothing there. But I'm not sure that that's true.
Right.
Let me also, while we're on the subject of Democrats and Republicans, this is my favorite news story of the week. Somebody, let me see if I can find his name here. Somebody named Alex Greer has ranked the IQs of American presidents from the very first president. Of the top six, five of them are Democrats. None of them are Republicans. John Adams had the highest IQ.
Uh-huh.
John Adams, and he was a member of the Whig Party. But number two was Thomas Jefferson. Number three was John F. Kennedy. Number four was Bill Clinton. Number five was Woodrow Wilson. And number six was our former employer, Jimmy Carter.
You're kidding me.
No, highest IQs. Yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Well, they all, you know, Carter graduated. Some people have said to me that they're surprised about Carter, but Carter graduated from the Naval Academy.
Right.
He commanded a submarine. He was not a, you know, he was a brilliant, well, as you and I both know, he was a brilliant guy. And while we're on the subject, you know, he's been ill lately, and our prayers go out to him, but and to his family. His wife was one of the most gracious people. I have to tell this story on the air because this is a personal experience I had with Mrs. Carter. I came to the DNC and we had our first big dinner, the president's dinner. And just prior to the dinner, there I was in my rented tuxedo. Somebody walked up to me and said, "You're going to introduce people to the president." And I said, "What?" I was like 26 years old. I had never met the president. And they said, yeah. "It's not hard. Here's a list of people." And there was a list of names. And they said, "It's really easy. You know, the person will come off stage. These are big contributors. And you'll say, Mr. President, this is Kathleen Gomez. Ms. Gomez, this is the president of the United States, and Mrs. Carter." Like maybe you wouldn't know who they were. You know, but
right. But
it was a protocol thing. Well, I was just nervous. I mean, I must have been sweating bullets. And there I was with my little list behind stage, and there must have been 50 people back there. And when it was time to go, they cleared out everybody. So it was just me, Carter, Mrs. Carter, and a handful of Secret Service agents who were like on the perimeter, making sure that nobody else, you know, providing security. So there I was standing next to the president and Mrs. Carter, and it started, and they came off. And of course, it was like I wasn't even there, right? Because he was hugging, you know, they like ignored me. Yeah, whoever you are. "Hey, Mr. President," you know. But when it was all over, Rosalynn Carter reached behind the president and tugged on my jacket. And when I turned around to look at her, she said, "You did a very good job." And I thought to myself, how sweet is that, that she even recognized how nervous I was, you know, and all that hubbub. And that not only did she notice it, but she took the time to try to make me feel good about it. So, you know, in my opinion, that shows the kind of character that woman had. And she's such a gracious and was such a great first lady. And I hope that, the president wins his battle with cancer, and my heart goes out to him and his lovely wife and their family. So, what do you think? Were the five of the six smartest presidents?
Well, John F. Kennedy was the third. That's amazing. The first was John Adams, and who did you say was second?
Thomas Jefferson.
Kennedy.
And I would argue that I think Jefferson was smarter, but Adams, they say, had an IQ of 169.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, they were best buddies, and also adversaries. You know, which shows you that you can do that in politics. You know.
They managed to come together, right?
And that's another example. John McCain and Ted Kennedy, you know, conservative, very liberal. They were great friends as well. So you don't have to, you know, we don't have to be diametrically opposed. It's troubling to me that's where we stand today.
Let me bring something else before we finish. So we finish with Donald Trump. You know, his statement about deporting, what is it, 11 million? How many people did he want to deport?
13 million.
13 million. That would take $200 to $400 billion to do.
Yeah, and the economy of California would collapse.
Yes. So, you know, I think that's the one point when, you know, you'd like to hear this guy say the things that everybody is wanting someone to say, but now someone needs to step in and say, okay, that's how Americans feel, and they have a right to feel that, as they've seen in certain areas like in California, Arizona, their schools be going downhill basically because it can't support all these students who are born in the United States and, you know, aren't part of the tax system, the undocumented workers. So, I mean, you know, and you know how I have these feelings about that being on the border. So, in reality, you know, it's not real feasible. So, someone needs to be speaking about that, and that's where you have the vacuum. You don't have Trump then saying, okay, it's going to cost $400 billion. That doesn't seem realistic. But the point is still there. We have too many undocumented workers, so let's start going down the line. You know, first of all, why don't they give everyone who's applied legally the ability to get citizenship? And then look at the people who are there illegally, and if they pay taxes, I mean, you'd have to do it case by case. How else could you do it?
Well, I think the answer to your question is that it's because of racists like Donald Trump who are out there stirring up the pot.
I don't believe that. No,
yeah,
there's
absolutely
a lot of people who are not racist who are asking those questions. Why are we having, where in the 80s did it go so wrong that these people were able to come over here and you know, become part of the system? And they are part of the system, and they do get food stamps, and they do get free medical care, even over people who are residents. I've told you this about Douglas. And Douglas is just not, oh, it's only happening there. It's happening throughout along the border and where there's populations of, I would say, probably any big undocumented group. But that's what people are saying, and they're
not
racist.
I'm not against border security, but let's face it, none of us, unless you're a Native American, we're all immigrants.
Yes, we are all immigrants, but we've never come in
this
massive.
New.
No, but you know, there's also not this huge number that has been coming in. Yes, they came in, but not like this. And the thing is, people do have a right. Well, listen, people have a right, and they're all thinking this, and it doesn't mean they're racist. They're looking at the financial situation of their towns, of their schools, of their hospitals, you know, and asking the question, how can we keep on supporting this when we can hardly make ends meet? And that's the big problem. I don't think it's racist. I think it's finances. You know, you work hard to do the American dream.
Let me tell you. But that's the problem, you see. We can hardly make ends meet because Wall Street sold subprime loans and put us in a dumper with billions of dollars. But because of guys like Donald Trump, who probably made money on the deal, they want to tell you that the guy sneaking across the border with his kids are the problem. When the real
problem
is people that have made billions of dollars and are being bailed out by our government.
That's very true.
It's not a matter.
And that's happening. But still, what do you tell me? How are you going to tell me who sat there and I've seen people who I know or have businesses get food stamps and they go sell the food across the line? Or when I see the hospital I work for close down because it doesn't get any help and it can't be giving free medical treatment, having babies in an ER where they can't ever really do a baby, so we have to spend $5,000 every shot to send the baby and the mom to Tucson. I mean, I have seen where it has happened and impacted a city, a small town, forever, and changed the school system. You know, when
But why are you blaming that on the immigrant and not blaming it on the government that didn't reimburse you?
So I guess
they passed a law. They passed a law that you have to treat those people, but then they don't reimburse you for the treatment. Why isn't government's fault?
I still blame the immigrant who comes across just to have a baby in the United States and then goes back across the line to live and do everything and then claim food stamps and medical access and has their kid who's now been born in the United States and the six other siblings come over and get educated in the school system in Douglas that has to raise taxes on the poor people who have fixed incomes where they have no industry, and it's just killing, it's breaking the back of everybody. So there is a huge problem, and it's not racism. It's called too many people, in a sense, are using the system, and I've seen it. And I cringe when people say, 47% of the population of the United States is all being paid by the government, food stamps or whatsoever. I think that's a terrible statement. But then I see firsthand what happens to in a town like where I'm from, and there's no, there's just no other way to say it. It definitely impacts the financial situation of a city to be able to. It's too big of a burden. So we have to somewhat. We have laws. We have laws. Why can't we enforce the laws?
Well, there's no good answer to why we can't enforce the laws. But let me tell you, again, I would say when I ran the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, there was a study that came out that said if you took all the welfare fraud that conservative groups talked about from the beginning of welfare in our country, food stamps and ASD, aid to family with dependent children. If you took their statistics of how much fraud there was more cost overruns on the M1 tank than 30 years of welfare fraud combined.
Right. And that's
the point. The fraud,
was that
putting
study
the responsibility
done
on the wrong people.
When
Uh-oh.
Was the study done? 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's not adequate anymore.
Well, not that study, but look at how much was spent on bailing those no good people in your stressed out town of New York City who spent all the money on subprime loans and are still doing well. We have a caller on line one, and hopefully, she's going to help me straighten you out. Clementine, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and looking up the stuff that you guys are talking about IQs, I think that IQs are kind of relative, only because people come to their prime when it's needed.
Did you what? I'm sorry?
We're missing that. Clementine. Oh, she may have dropped off. Oh, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what did she say?
I was talking about Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill had a very kind of not a meager IQ, but he became one of the greatest leaders in the whole world. And to think that an IQ makes a good president doesn't. Like you said earlier, Jimmy Carter had a really high IQ, but he was a mediocre president, but a really good man.
I don't think I agree with you. I don't think it's the only determinant of you know, we know people who probably, you know, were didn't have high IQs who were great leaders.
Well, you know, and one of them, which is really funny, because I looked all up all of the IQs and stuff, and George Bush's IQ, W, the last one, was 91, and his pop was 93. His pop was 93, and look what his pop did.
Well,
you know, I mean, look at the career he had.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well,
I guess Senator Brown was just trying to find more reasons why Democrats are supposedly better than Republicans. You know, he tends to go
I know, and it's not necessarily true. It's just people come to an age when they're needed most.
Well, I think, I don't necessarily agree with that, Clementine, but I believe that there are leaders who are made by the times, and I would agree with you that Winston Churchill was one, and Franklin Roosevelt was one, and certainly Abraham Lincoln was one. You know, would we think that although I think Lincoln probably had a pretty high IQ, would he have been as great?
Lincoln did. He was about 130.
Without the Civil War, would he have been, you know, would he have been the person that he is? And would have Churchill's the perfect example because he was almost thrown out of the country before the Second World War because of a battle that he was involved in.
At Gallipoli.
Right, that didn't go well. So, you know, that was just the opposite for him, right? That battle, that circumstance almost ruined him, and then the other circumstance proved that he was a great leader. And the thing that we were talking about earlier, I think that really comes into play here, is that Churchill and Roosevelt and Lincoln, Kennedy, these people were more important than their IQ was their courage. They had great courage. All of those men had great courage.
They all had great courage, and they all had a lot of sense. And I don't think that IQ has anything to do with it. I think it I think they need to be able to have judgment more than IQ. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, I do. I do agree. I think that there are despots that you could. Mussolini was probably a smart guy, and you know, I mean, I think character.
And Stalin probably was not a complete thug, right. Even everybody right. thought he was, but he was an awful person.
Is Putin have a high? IQ?
Yeah.
He does,
Putin,
right?
No, I didn't look up Putin. I think Putin's an idiot.
Right.
But.
And who wants him? He may be the scariest man on the planet.
I know. And I think he has unbelievable plans to undermine the United States. And I know everyone, there's some people who think he's great, like my son, but oh my gosh, he's the old Russian. He's the old Russian.
No, no. Vladimir Putin is a thug. He's a lot like Stalin.
What's his IQ? Does he say? Anyone see?
I don't know.
But he is also,
I think he's also smart,
but he's just kind of a jerk.
Oh, well, he's a thug, that's for sure. But
yeah, he's a thug, that's for sure. I mean, you know, even the mafia doesn't put radioactive isotopes inside the people they don't like. I mean, the guy really is. He really is a...
I mean, he's KGB, for God's sakes, and it doesn't exist anymore. They don't call it Stasi or anything like that. It's just he's a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, and that really is the difference, right, between America, between a democracy and, you know, a communist country. He was head of the KGB, and Bush was head of the CIA. But Bush didn't, you know, when George Bush, when President Bush the first, 41, I guess, right, he was... 41?
Yeah, 41.
He came on. Right. The CIA didn't take over the government.
No, and he was also a good man.
He was a good man. He is a good man. He's still with us, so let's not.
I know, he totally is. I mean, just like Jimmy Carter. I mean, Jimmy Carter was brilliant. Maybe GHW wasn't, but he had the money and stuff to be able to make himself a better man or had the opportunity, and he chose to be a good man.
Well, yes, he certainly was, and you know that he was, we like to say, he was the greatest ex-president, because look what he's done. He didn't go out and write books, and although he did write several books, he didn't just write books and play golf and go on speaking engagements. What he did was he built houses for the poor. He went into Haiti, and he dealt with... election reform. He went to Africa and helped poor people. I mean, this man is a great, great humanitarian. Well,
and
thanks for calling
Jimmy Carter.
In. Yes. Well, thanks for calling in, Clementine. We always appreciate your input, and
yes,
we hope
we
to talk
do.
To you soon.
Hey, I want
to
ask you something there, Senator Brown. What's going on with the murder rate going up in D.C.? You guys are having, I mean, I've seen it all over the newspapers
it's
and Twitter.
It's terrible. We have already, yes, we have already reached the same number of murders that we had last year. We've exceeded it. It's now 105. I think last year was a couple below that, 103. And we still have 4 months to go in the year. And some of the ones lately have just been hideous. You know, disputes over, there was one where a kid from a local high school stabbed somebody 25 times on the metro during rush hour. Nobody intervened to help the victim, and it was over a cell phone robbery. There was another situation where there was some petty dispute in front of a bus stop where another teenager murdered a teenager over, you know, it happened over a guy getting off the bus and bumping a child. He bumped a child with his backpack on the way out. And the mother got in a fight with the guy for not apologizing to the child. And when the guy turned around to retaliate with the mother, another guy got involved and was killed for standing up for the mother. So, you know, it's just been hideous. And this week, our mayor has put a lot of things, $15 million. She dedicated to some of the things that she thinks will help, like putting security cameras, giving you an incentive if you own a business to put in a security camera. Now, I don't know how that's going to help, to be honest with you. It may help catch you after you've done the crime, but I don't know how that's going to stop crime. We're also going to try to retain police with incentives who are trying to retire. You know, we had such a terrible time in the 80s that we hired a lot of new police officers. So, but this is a discussion for another day because we're running out of time, you know, and we all know what happened. What happened in Roanoke this week. It was just a terrible tragedy. That young woman was 24 years old. You and I have kids that age. It's terrible. And that cameraman. And so I think that you and I have to have...
Another gun control issue?
Yeah, have Vlad Everett on. You know, I don't want to take anybody's guns away. I just want to keep them out of it.
I just think you need... The key here is behavioral health. It's about helping... There's too many crazy people because the world is too hard to deal with for many people. And so we got to deal with that. And we're running out of time because you've chosen an extra long song that we didn't get to.
Yeah, we didn't get to. We'll do it. We'll do something next time. It's more important for me, I feel, to deprogram you. And get you away from the Republican Party. Hopefully, we're going to have a great guest next week. I yell at Hines. But in the meantime, I'm going to get a bunch of people and we're going to go to Kansas and kidnap Kathleen and bring her back to the liberal part of the country where she can, where she may be stressed out, but we'll get her back on the right side. So I'll give you the last word since I've been talking so much.
Yeah, I'll just keep my ruby slippers here in Kansas because you put those in your back before you know it. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much to everyone for listening to us. And I always am amazed how the time flies when I debate or talk the issues with you. And I enjoy it. And thanks for listening. And I guess we'll see you next time with our guest, who is, again, who?
It's Ayelet Hines, and she is not only an activist who I met actually out on the campaign trail, and she is going to discuss activism and politics and public health. She's a public health person, and she's a faculty member at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. I know you love Mayor Bloomberg, so we'll have a lot to talk about.
All right, sounds great. Thank you, America, for listening.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.